Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
The other day, I pushed out a tweet on Twitter, X, whatever you call it, and it was about an old billboard I had of myself. And the billboard was the picture of my big, fat, ugly face. And the question, miss me? I'm right here at johncastnews.com. And I decided, should I put this out as an ad in the Tribune and the Sun-Times? Would they take it? And I wrote a little thing. People began checking in on social media saying they loved the idea or they were interested in the screaming match that would ensue because, hey, it's journalism, right? I mean, we might disagree, but we agree in freedom of expression, don't we? And one of the guys that I want to enlist for this advice for me is Raymond Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, who understands how all this stuff works. Ray is a fierce critic of the establishment in Chicago, that basically the left-wing communist establishment. He's a critic of Johnson's. He's a critic of the others who have destroyed the city. And with me always is my friend and co-host, Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer, friend of cats, baker of pies, future physics teacher of Illinois, although I hope it'll be Indiana. And me, I'm John Cass of johncassnews.com. Come to us, subscribe, join us, read some interesting stuff where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. And where are you? As Mayor Johnson runs from ShotSpotter, attacks his critics in journalism who dare ask him questions and compare them to Confederate dunces, as he goes to London and lives the life of a big shot politician, you're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
As promised, Ray Lopez, alderman who stands up, he speaks real truth to power, and that power that is popping Prozac doesn't want to hear it. Welcome to the Chicago Way again, old friend Ray Lopez.
How are you?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Jeff, and to all your listeners.
Before we begin, and Ray's going to bring us up on all things Chicago, but I have to get their advice on a program that I'm trying to do. I've come up with the idea to rent space in the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, at least on the page, to advertise for johncastnews.com. You think they'll take my money?
Well, I think the Tribune definitely will take your money. They'll think of it as a return on your retirement.
I keep getting donation fundraising ads from the Sun-Times, so I'm pretty sure they'll take your money too, John.
Well, yeah. I mean, is there any downside to taking ads out in the Tribune and Sun-Times saying, miss me? I'm right here at johncastnews.com.
I would love to see a foreword included in Greg Pratt's book having to advertise for you.
You know, that I don't smoke, but I quit smoking, Ray. But if that happened, I would have to roll over and have smoke and look at the ceiling for quite some time. So what is going on in Chicago with Mayor Johnson imploding? What is going on with that, Ray?
Well, I think you hit it right on the head, John. Brandon Johnson has been mayor for 17 months and still hasn't been able to figure out which direction he wants the city to go other than downward. He's made every excuse possible as to why he cannot be questioned, why he cannot be held accountable. I'm half waiting to hear, you know, I grew up in a middle-class family with my mother, come out of his mouth when he gets at the next press conference, because it seems like he's afraid of being held accountable for anything that's going on, especially when you see CPS is imploding, the city's budget's going to implode in about 2 months, crime is out of control. He left Chicago without any technology to detect gunshots faster than Joe Biden left Afghanistan. So I'm at a loss for where he thinks we're going, and more specifically, how long he thinks he can continue to deflect people's attention from the fact that his failures are mounting more than the White Sox losses this season.
Oh. Well, that sucks because the White Sox suck too. And I just ran into a lady who works for Howard Pizer and Jerry Reinsdorf. I was at my Athletico getting therapy, not mental, but physical therapy. And she worked for them. And I said, how bad is the season? And she just gave me a look like, ugh. And that's how bad it is.
And I think that's kind of how everyone feels in Chicago right now.
Yeah.
And when you remind people that we still have 28 months to go, you know, everyone just takes that collective sigh of, oh, crap.
Jokingly, along me and my wife, we're longing for Lori Lightfoot to come back. God. Because I can't believe it's you know, we're in crazier times. I mean, I do believe it. But Ray, you said something we kind of started with, the city's 2 months to go and what happens. I mean, you said that we're kind of heading towards a financial cliff. I know we're short on money for everything. And somehow the mayor was able to renovate the first lady's office, apparently, to the tune of $80,000. But what happens in 2 months?
Front load washer is done.
Apparently, my front-load washer. trying to do laundry to make my husband happy.
Multitasking, I understand.
In 2 months is when the budget of the city of Chicago will be coming to a head. You know, the mayor right now is trying to brace city council for $1 billion budget shortfall for the 2025 year, along with a nearly $300 million shortfall for this year.
Right.
But, you know, I just have to clarify something, Jeff, and I think it's important for all of your guys' listeners to understand, is that we are not short money. That is a mischaracterization. We have plenty of money that we generate through taxes, fees, and whatnot in the city of Chicago. The problem is we have a spending. We have an addiction to spending in the city of Chicago. And what we're seeing right now is the mayor, both as the head of the city of Chicago's government, as well as the master puppeteer over at the Board of Education, both government agencies are trying to justify all of the federal job-related spending that they've done over the last 3.5 years because of COVID and transfer the responsibility of funding them from the federal government to local taxpayers. The simple fix, to be perfectly honest, would be to bring us back to 2020 spending levels, which are roughly $12 billion, or put another way, 25% less of what we spend right now.
That's the thing, is that the spending is, you know, every time you look around, there's a new program for this, or there's whatever is going on, and the money is all tied up in COVID spending. It's like, you know, there was someone opened a purse strings and I was like, hey, let's go nuts, it's Christmas, and now the tap's been shut off, and you know, there's no no plan of hey, instead of we're going to freeze everything and figure out our issues. Well, that we should have done that 2 years ago. I mean, that was even when he first came in. I mean, that's where he should have started.
Yep. And I mean, none of your listeners would play a scratch off, win $1,000, and then budget for that $1,000 every month moving forward.
Right.
That's exactly what we've done.
Oh my God.
And if you dare criticize him, well, I if you ask him a simple question, as Sarah Schulte from WLS asked him, he went off on like Ku Klux Klan, didn't he? You're a racist if you ask him a question. I don't get it.
I mean, the fact that he was that condescending, demeaning, and arrogant to those four female reporters.
She's a good reporter, man. And she doesn't deserve that.
Asking a very cut and dry question. Right. She wasn't baiting him. It wasn't a gotcha. It was just a very simple question. And then turning to his six appointees to ask them what their thoughts were on the short-term loan that they want to do for CTU. He got all offended and he started yelling at her. We're not going to do that, blah, blah, blah. That's their right. job. You are now competing on the press's abilities. And you know what? You can get as angry as you want, but if the mayor's that upset about the most basic of questions being asked of him, maybe he should change the subject. And the fact that, you know, the subject is you just did a coup on the Board of Education. You've installed all CTU sympathizers and enablers to not only get rid of the guy who won't pay for your union's one-year gimmicks, but also is willing to take out a loan, a high interest loan to do so, and you don't want to be questioned about it. They're not questioning you because you're a black man. They're not questioning you because you have a black family. They're questioning you because you clearly are in the pocket of someone who has a conflict of interest, and that's the CTU when it comes to the Board of Education.
Oh, you're talking about Stacey Davis Gates then. You're saying that she's the shot caller in this administration, huh?
Well, we all know that.
Can you imagine her being mayor? I mean, what a world we would live in if that was the case.
I think every day would be like that press conference.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, I mean, now she's just in the shadows.
And you know what really, you know, drives me nuts is that everything turns into a de-evolution on race. Everything is race.
Yeah,
race. Right. And I represent, as you know, John, African Americans and Latinos. Now, especially going into Chicago Lawn and Gage Park again, I represent both. Well, I might add, without having to divide anybody. And then
working people, unpretentious, good people. Yeah.
100%. And all of them are tired of the race card being thrown out every time he's caught in a bind. They want to know, what are you going to do to make their neighborhood safe? What are you going to do to improve city services, to kill the rats throughout the entire city of Chicago? What are you going to do to get the garbage picked up and make sure that the garbage trucks are clean and not spilling dirty juice everywhere? Those are the things people care about because that's what's in front and back of their homes. And every time he opens his mouth and tries to pivot or say that anyone trying to reduce your taxes is a vestige of the Civil War Confederacy. What the hell are you talking about? I just don't want to pay more in taxes. And as somebody whose family came here 60 years after emancipation, how dare you try to equate me to a slave owner? I wasn't even here for that.
Your family was dealing with the hard left back in the days of old Mexico when they were destroying the churches and the middle class. You weren't busy with
Robert E. Lee.
Robert E. Lee. All right. Well, let me ask you something. Given the fact that you represent the working class people, the good people that I know, I've seen it, and I'm from Gage Park originally. I mean, my family had a business there. I love the people there. What is going on with the presidential race with the working class drifting away from Kamala Harris and Obama and race card nonsense and moving toward common sense when it comes to the economy? What is happening?
You know, I think the couple things, John, are very interesting in this race. First and foremost, I think no one listened to me in the Democratic Party when I said there will be blowback because of the immigration system and everything that we've seen with the manipulation of asylum to get you know, 11 million people through the back window.
Right.
And I think that's a huge issue that's driving a lot of this division, right, and the split from our core Democratic constituencies who are now looking for a new home. Two, I think the fact that Kamala Harris refused to even acknowledge her role or how bad it is or where the federal government failed, or saying that Joe Biden did everything right, really like putting her finger right in the eye of everybody who sees what's going on and was hoping for some solution, or even just saying, you know what, I wasn't in charge, but I understand, feel your pain, let's move forward. We're not getting it. But I also think it's interesting, in my opinion, that, you know, people in general, are, especially in the city of Chicago, are very much moving away from identity, racial politics, right? We have now elected an African-American mayor, not once, but twice, and back-to-back, I might add. In the city of Chicago, that everyone keeps saying, oh, we're so segregated, we're so racist, we're so this, we're so that. But yet, we still elected an African-American twice as mayor. So the flip side of that is that the Obamas, the Harrises, and the left elites now are frustrated because they don't have the race card to rely on to get people to vote for candidates who are not in the best interest of those demographics anymore. The fact that Barack Obama thinks he can lecture the brothers and say it's your fault that we're behind because you don't have the same energy, well, maybe you should have picked someone who had some enthusiasm for the black community, and not someone who was the lock-em-up prosecutor who thought it was cool to throw people, single moms, in jail for smoking weed or whatever Kama was doing in San Francisco to get elected out there, and now having to pay the piper back because everyone has learned about her record.
And then rip and then laughing at those people when she's on national talk shows about how she smokes weed, right?
Right. Or she's got a Glock but doesn't know what it is. Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of Obama, I can see that we're on the same page here. I think the whole he's panicking because he's running to support her with that kind of rhetoric, with that racial shaming.
Yep.
But what's going on with the Temple of Adoration and Fealty back here in Chicago? Are they still building this thing?
So they are. They are building the Obama non-presidential library center over there because he's very quick to point out it's not a presidential library. And yet, you know, there are still people in Woodlawn who want some guarantees that they're not going to be pushed out, that they're the old homeowners that are still left in the area want to be protected. The people who were through Woodlawn, thick and thin, want to make sure it's still for them and their neighbors, their families. So, you know, it's moving forward, but I think that really goes to the question of, can you continue to lecture people while ignoring them at the same time? And that might work good for white lakefront liberals, but it's falling flat when it comes to the black community who remembers that where Obama came from, and helped him get to where he got, and don't want him to forget that point either.
You're touching on a subject I think that Jeff and I have talked about in the past, which is the arrogance of the white elite socialists telling minorities how to be and how to behave and how to think. And one of them is the guy who's responsible for most of the precious land grab in Jackson Park for the Obama Temple is none other, in my mind, than the fat boy himself, Governor J.B. Pritzker. Is there any blowback to him yet? Or will we have to wait till poor black families are dispossessed from their homes and regentrified out and huddle on the curb as they're waiting to be moved?
Well, you know, I think the governor has really benefited from the fact that Brandon Johnson's leadership style is so bad that nobody's really looking at J.B. Pritzker, that we can't get past the headlines of $30,000 in makeup or $80,000 in furniture or $500,000 to go to a Bears game in London. The governor, right, and the state of Illinois have done some pretty incredible things, particularly as it relates to the asylum seekers. And the fact that we are, that all told, were $1.3 billion in last year on the migrant situation, thanks to the state and Medicaid paying for everything imaginable for these 48,000 individuals, has really put the state in a financial bind that I think that he was hoping, with all the presidential switcheroos going on, that he would have been picked so he could get the hell out of Dodge before anyone figures it out. But I think that is going to come home to roost next budget season, because it sounds like the spending, the deficit spending, the debt, all of that's going to becoming to the forefront next year. And if he's still here, he's going to have to wear the jacket on a lot of that moving forward. His best hope would be to get an appointment and leave the lieutenant governor, Juliana Stratton, to have to figure it out while he's doing whatever he wants to do if Kamala Harris wins next election.
If she wins, then he won't have a chance to be president.
Right, right. Yeah, but is he going to make it 4 years?
Well, to be fair, John, the Democratic Party is getting very good at pushing aside elected nominees, so you never know.
I think you've used the word coup several times in this conversation already, so yeah, they're good at that, definitely.
It is what it is. I mean, we've seen that organized hat trick on the southwest side of Chicago. We've seen it throughout many parts of the city of Chicago. And it's really a maneuver that we are all intimately aware of here, which is you vote for one and replace them with another who probably could never have gotten elected on their own, just so that you could maintain control over the outcome. The only thing is, on the national level, it's backfiring tremendously, because you have somebody who, despite being on the national level, clearly doesn't know how to have an interview without a teleprompter or talk to people like a human being. And I think that's why they're having so many problems now.
I say blame Willie Brown. If it wasn't for Willie Brown, we wouldn't be going through this mess right now, right? Thanks, Willie. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, Alderman, I was thinking about you. You mentioned it, the shot spotter situation. I mean,
yeah.
What a debacle, right? This is the idea that the mayor, for those who don't know, the mayor is forcibly ending a contract that, seeing by all natures, is saving lives. I mean, the effectiveness versus arrest ratio, which, I mean, if that's a good metric to tell us, you know, what, why we should keep this, is suspect in its own. But the mayor is, he wants it to go away. But then his office realizes, oh crap, this money is coming from fees and taxes that can only be used for technology, for safety technology. So then they were going to like, well, maybe we'll scramble and find something to replace it. But you guys in city council, and let me make sure we get this right, got enough to go, you know, we're ready to veto, ready to slap him down for this because it doesn't make any sense. Maneuvered around him, gave the power to the superintendent, which is still part of the executive branch, and somehow they're arguing that the executive branch is being, you know, somehow run around them, but it's not. Where do things stand? I mean, what happens next here?
So the city council passed both an order and an ordinance trying to keep Chicagoans safe. And at the end of the day, this is not about, as the mayor said, a greedy corporation. This is about making sure that we have the ability to recognize when shots are going off in a community, and in communities in particular where nobody calls 911 anymore.
Right.
We have seen where 86 lives in the past year, I believe, have been saved, because 911 was never called, but ShotSpotter technology sent police to their location. And I believe that overall, we've had 1,976 victims rendered aid.
Right.
Over the entire tenure, Brendan Johnson, when, again, no 911 call was made. Now, we have seen since that technology has gone dark, we've already seen several people murdered in the city of Chicago, particularly that poor young woman whose body was in the alley in the rain overnight for 9 hours because nobody called when she was shot and she died. The mayor is sticking to his stupid campaign promise just to say that I'm the one who turned this off. I'm the one that leaped into the pool not knowing whether or not there was water in it. I'm the one that did that. and we are all suffering for it. So the city council did what it had to do, not once but twice, by ever widening margins. And yes, it's setting us up for a very interesting challenge, in my opinion, because what do you do when the mayor of Chicago himself refuses to follow the laws of the city of Chicago? It's a very interesting legal question, mm-hmm. because at first he said that the order that we passed directing him to keep it in wards that want it was illegal, or it's unheard of for us to give directives. And I hate to break it to him, but Chicago Civics 101, we issue hundreds of orders every year to departments of all varieties to do things in neighborhoods and communities, because that's how, by common practice, we help move things along. You could go on the city clerk's website right now, type in order, and you will see hundreds of them pop up, not just for this, but for everything.
And Johnson's refute to you all is that, you know, the people are worried about this. It makes them feel over policed. It makes the people and the people. And I was like, well, you're elected alder people. Like, this is, that's how it works. The people elect you, and then you take, just because you don't follow the same stripes or aren't the same ilk, maybe it doesn't count. I mean, I don't understand that.
Remember something else too, guys. 80% of the people want gunshot detection technology.
Right.
So even if you don't like us, 80% of those across the entire city whom he is charged with representing want this. And he could have kept his promise and said, look, you know, we're going to work towards a new system or a different system or evaluate, but we're going to power down slowly, gradually, and responsibly. He chose not to do that. Even after myself and allies came together and presented him with a revised contract to help him through his RFP process until the end of next year at a 48% discount, he still wouldn't take us up on the offer, still wouldn't maintain a. And, you know, all I can equate this to is, who the hell sells their house without having a home to move into? Pretty much what he did. He said, I'm selling this, and I'm going to go drive around in my car for the next year and a half till I figure something else out. Nobody's that stupid and does things like this, in real life anyway.
Who is advising him? I mean, I understand the political argument. I think we should state it. He condemns ShotSpotter, but what's really going on is he doesn't want cops to arrest gangbangers because these gangbangers are minority, mostly Black and Latino, and he does a whole people of color thing, and he can't handle it. He doesn't want this to happen. And the constituency that he appeals to of white socialist leftist reporters and maybe some others think it's okay. But I don't think the average person, the working people of Chicago, Black, brown, white, whatever, don't think it's okay to be hiding in their homes when the shooting starts. Yeah?
You are 100% spot on, John, because he's using the usual Black and brown phrase, which I am so sick and tired of hearing.
Yeah.
From somebody who couldn't give a rat's behind about African-American or Latinos. But he's not speaking to us. He's speaking, as you said, to the great white privileged, guilty privileged folks who want to feel good about themselves for helping us poor brown people and poor Black people through our normal without listening to the fact that we want bad guys to be in jail. We want the right bad guys in jail. And community after community that I represent or that I visited all say the same thing. Just do the job the right way against the right people, and we'll all be fine. And that's what they're afraid of. And I think back to when all the lefties and the liberal lakefront crowd were like, oh, we need, you know, body cams to catch the police and see how bad they treat criminals and this and that.
Right.
And the moment those body cams showed how professional our police were and how bad criminals were, everyone's like, oh, never mind. You could take care of the camera. We don't need it anymore. You know, and the same goes for the gunshot detection or the policing. You know, they don't want to admit the failures that we see in our neighborhoods from a small number of individuals who, no matter what you do, say, or offer, are never going to change. You and I have seen that live and in person on Rockwell Bryant Park. That the only way you can address those folks is with as much force and resolve as they're bringing to a community to terrorize it.
Period. You didn't even have a bulletproof vest on when you were confronting those gangbangers.
Well, I had you, John. I didn't tell you.
I was about 65 pounds heavier then. There was more fat to me to interrupt an assault, but you're the one who stood up to them, not me.
But you have to. And if you don't, you give them a quarter to continue doing what they're doing, and they understand that you are on their side, whether you are articulating that or not. And we see that ever since with like Adam Toledo and all these other individuals who catch doing these things and are trying to protect communities. And if you say that, well, we're trying to protect you from the police, well, why don't you protect me from the gangbangers and drug dealers and dope boys standing out on the corner?
Right. How about we need to protect the community at large, society at large from the rot? Yeah.
It's not about them. What I see now happening is that the hard left of Chicago, what remains, you know, those who can't write newspaper columns, are out there freaking out, trying to figure out how they're going to protect their own power. And one of those ways to do it, I think, they think, is to translate the efforts to basically find a white shadow, like Arne Duncan, somebody like a white progressive approved by Obama and Axelrod, and put them in charge. And I see either Conway or with daddy's money, or Arne Duncan with money from he's getting from the Civic Committee, which is like a pat on the head from through Obama, to run for mayor in the future. And I don't think that's going to help the city. I think we need people who know, like Ray Lopez, who know the mechanisms of government. And Ray, the last time I checked, you're sober and you're not in a bar at 11 o'clock. So that cuts out some other candidates who might want to be a mayor.
Very sorry.
And you're just doing your work, protecting your neighborhood.
No, Chicago needs right now a mayor who's only focused on this city. Period.
Right.
Sad part is you have folks who are positioning, jockeying, and whether they are mayor or mayoral wannabes, to see what stepping stones they can be. Mayor Daley was good, although he had his faults, but he was good because he just wanted to be mayor. That's all he wanted to be. Wanted to be mayor, wanted to care about neighborhoods, drive around, and focus on the communities. That's what this city needs again. But I think that definitely you have people who are, look, I believe, like many, Brandon Johnson, as of right now, 95% one and done. I think you're going to see that his extreme left, the CTU left, are going to do everything they can to basically do a smash and grab on the city of Chicago right now. Grab whatever you can, because you know you're going to be shown the door in 27 months. So, right. So do whatever you got to do, which justifies how you did what you did to the school board and whatever else is coming down the pike. But
it's also a return on investment, Ray. Don't forget that. I mean, so, you know, they got something to show for.
$300 million return on a $10 million investment, and that's a pretty good deal, if you ask me. but I think that, you know, going back to who's next, is that
the White Shadow, Arne Duncan, Bill Conway, Daddy's Money, certain aldermen who are drunks. I love Chicago. I was born there. I don't want to see that happen. I'm sorry.
I think you're going to be at a tipping point, to be perfectly honest, because you're going to have the guilt, the privileged folks are not necessarily going to be as unified as they have been two elections in a row, in my opinion. They'll still be strong, and for whatever reason, this white guilt crap runs deep in the city of Chicago, in part for many of these imported Chicagoans, these transplants that have come here. You're a white guy. I'm sure you have no white guilt out of Gage Park. But I'm fairly confident that everyone that came here from everywhere else, East Coast, West Coast, you know, they brought their issues here with them. You know, native Chicagoans, second, third, fourth generations don't have that issue. But right. What I think is definitely going to be interesting is the fact that coming out of the black community, the South and West sides, is this notion that, you know, what's the point of electing an African-American mayor when two mayors in a row haven't done anything to uplift these communities, their communities, our communities? And I think that's going to create a very interesting opportunity for whomever is non-African-American and can connect with those voters and those communities as somebody who's not just going to play, oh, I'm black, vote for me, but who says, I see you, I hear you, and I can help you and help you help yourself. Whoever can resonate that message to the African-American community, in my opinion, who's not black, will be the next mayor. Did I make you speechless? Holy cow. But
I'm going to let this sink in. No, I'm relishing it because I see the political logic of what you're saying. And I think that I don't see the black community now, whatever that is, as raising somebody up. Unless it's Malcolm X too, who hasn't been born yet. But when that comes, that's going to come with fire and blood. And I don't think we want to see that right now.
No, definitely not. Hey, Ray, before we let you go, I know you're fighting the good fight here on this one, I guess. But you talk to me a little bit about the National Guard building issue. I saw GN, our friends over at GNTV, do a story on this. But you guys are trying to get, I mean, which makes 100% in the Southwest side. If I'm trying to pick a place, I probably need some help in policing. Southwest side's probably on the list. What's going on over there?
So the 8th District, which is one of the largest police districts in the city of Chicago, is home to over 250,000 Chicagoans. And my colleagues, Marty Quinn and Savannah Tabarez, two good stalwarts of the Southwest side, along with myself, Derek Curtis, David Moore, and Stephanie Coleman, are pushing the mayor to accept the old National Guard armory located on the south side of the Midway Airport property, and use it as a police station in the 8th District. Basically, divide the 8th District in two. We have one district already built at 63rd and St. Louis, and we could use this on the West End and create a whole new police district over there. The 8th District, over 250,000 people, would be the second largest city in Illinois if it was a city unto itself, just behind the city of Chicago. And as much as the mayor talks about over-policing, blah, 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 you know, this is a district where it's under-policed because the police-to-resident ratio is among the highest in the city of Chicago, because we have, for as many people as are covered in the district here, the same number of officers as there are in the neighboring 7th District, the Englewood District, which only has 56,000 residents in it. So we want the mayor to do the right thing. The state, Senator Porfirio and Representative Cuellar, were able to work with Pritzker to get this transferred to us for $1. It's a functional facility that just needs to be renovated for police use standards. But the mayor, in his infinite policing wisdom, said, you know, screw you, Southwest side. Screw your referendum where 80% of you said you wanted this. Screw your elected officials. I'm going to turn this into a storage facility because that's what I want to see.
Jeez. And we're not talking a place. I mean, this is a station. This is where you'd have people who are in charge of cops, also those cops. But like, this is what you want. You want more cops freewheeling over broad areas. We're talking about bad actors. You want more oversight, right? I mean, come on. Well,
not just that, but think about if you're a resident and the 8th District is not the sleepy retirement district it was. Right. John Cass was running around in it. This is the new 8th District where if you have an issue, we've had 3 officers killed in it in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
This is a district where if you have to go from Harlem to Western, it'll be at least 15 minutes with the sirens on to get from one end to the other, assuming you don't get caught by one of the trains that intersect throughout the district. So it only makes sense to do this in a more geographically secure way to help the residents on the Southwest side. But it just speaks volumes to how tone deaf this mayor is to public safety, particularly in neighborhoods that want it and want to do the right thing. Because to say that you don't even want to have this conversation, then he pivoted and blamed the federal government, the FAA, which surprisingly brought Chewy and Jimmy Garcia and Sean Kasten out. They're coming out today to say, "Don't blame us. We're not the FAA is not behind this. We can park the police helicopters here and dispatch them from Midway directly, as opposed to Gary, Indiana, or wherever they come from.
Right.
We have more officers we could put here, and it just reeks of insensitivity to what's going on here in this district with our officers' safety, but also with the concerns residents themselves have brought up. You know, many of whom are those, you know, black and brown folks, again, that he says he cares about, but would walk over our bodies just to get to a CTU meeting.
Oh, well, yeah, that, I mean, it's this shot spotter thing all over again. It's this idea that he made a promise to defund the police, and any dollar spent towards the police is a dollar against that dream. So,
well, I think somebody summed it up best, guys, and that was when they said, this isn't about defunding the police, or it's not about the technology. This is about dismantling the apparatus of policing. These folks are abolitionists in their core, you know, and we've seen time and time again where these police abolitionists don't have an answer for who's supposed to be in charge of keeping people safe and secure when the school counselors and the hugs and kisses don't work anymore. But they're continuing to push this on all of us because they know better, because in their little bubbles, they figured out that, you know, it's your mental health that makes you be a criminal, not, you know, generational gang life.
To wrap this up, I would say what we learned today with Ray Lopez, that there will be a candidate for mayor who knows what he's doing, who doesn't drink at 10 o'clock in the morning in the bars, who his daddy is not a rich man, and whose daddy is not Barack Obama Axelrod. And that person will run for mayor and have a good chance of winning after the devastation of this storm called Brandon Johnson is gone. I look forward to that day because Chicago needs to rise up again. And let's not wait for 40 years like they waited for Detroit. Already Detroit is better than Chicago now. And Chicago has to come back.
I don't know about that, John. I don't know. That's a tall order. Chicago's still better than Detroit because Detroit sucks.
You just hate the Red Wings, okay? I understand where you're coming from. Ray Lopez, there's so much more we got to talk about. We've got to talk about the good Mexican restaurants that I want to go to with you in your ward to sit down and have a coffee. Maybe we could do the Chicago Way from your neighborhood.
John, I welcome you and Jeff to the Southwest Side to do a live broadcast with me and your fan club. Whoever wants to join us, I think it'd be awesome.
All right, let's plan that out after the election. First, we have a republic to save, but after we save the republic, let's start going about saving the city of Chicago. Ray Lopez, Alderman, thanks. 15th Ward, a man of experience and bravery who stood up against the gangs. I saw it for myself with my own eyes. Ray Lopez, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Chicago, thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Ray. For Raymond Lopez, Alderman of the 15th Ward, future mayoral candidate is what I'm seeing. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, future physics teacher. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com, where you'll always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us. Subscribe today. $5 a month or $50 a year. I don't run free, and that's the Chicago way, too. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.